Hi, this is Nadine Dietz, host of CMO Moves. I just wanted to take a quick moment to say thanks so much for stopping by today and to give you a quick overview on what to expect. CMO Moves is all about game-changing leaders, their incredible journeys, the moves that they've made, and most importantly, their personal stories of how they got to be the leaders of some of the world's most exciting brands. I hope you'll enjoy their stories as much as I do and take away a few tips and some inspiration for your day. Enjoy the show.
Hello and welcome to CMO Moves. Today I have the great honor of having Cynthia Chen with me, who is the CEO of General Mills in China. Cynthia, hi and welcome to the show.
Thank you. My pleasure.
It is my pleasure. I can't believe that we're here in New York together. Randomly, we found each other in the same city. And we're here at Challenger Brands because you could stop by. And here we are recording a podcast. How cool is that?
Exactly. I'm only here for like 4 days. And we've got a chance to talk to each other.
Yeah. And it's been so fun seeing you yesterday for a few minutes and now again today. And I am just so curious. I remember when you were at Mondelez. And then you went over to GSK, and then you now are in China as the CEO of General Mills. So let's start there. Like, what made you take that role on?
There are three reasons. First and foremost, I always say that when you find another job, the chemistry with your boss, you can say that the entire company is 3,000 people, 5,000 people, 10,000 people, but the most important person is your boss. I was lucky enough to meet my boss, and the chemistry instantaneously, you know, I felt that. The second piece is a love challenge. My good trait of me, or bad trait of me, you can say, is I'm not very patient. I love challenge. And there's no other place to be in China to have the biggest challenge you can ever have. I would say General Mills is a legacy company in China. And my passion is really, how do I transform a legacy company to be a modern organization? And I found that fascinating. And the third part is very personal, which is also one of the reasons my mom actually was diagnosed with cancer. Mm. In China, the culture is when your parents are dying, and you have to be there and just take their responsibilities. So those are the three reasons why I actually went to General Mills. You know, obviously, underscore that, I started my career with General Mills, and I really love the people. I love the value of the company. I'm not trying to sell the company, but truly that, you know, most of the people I met, I really had a great relationship with. So if you pack them all together, that's why I made a decision really quickly and moved to China.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So what an amazing journey already. You were sharing with me some of the differences, and there are so many of them, but I'm looking at your really exciting, incredible, like red pants that you're wearing. They look like leather pants. And you said to me, this is a partnership that General Mills creates in China. Like, I wouldn't have never thought General Mills to be in the pants business. So what's that about?
So yeah, and this is what I call China speed. In General Mills, our company was saying that we serve the world with the food people love. But actually in China, I would say first and foremost, underscore China speed, because everything happens in China, 3 months is like 3 years in China. The second piece is also, we're very dynamic. In China, we have two major brands. We have Haagen-Dazs, which everybody knows here is actually from Nestle, but outside of China, United States, it's actually General Mills. It's a fashionable lifestyle brand. And then we also have a local jewel. It's called the Wan Chao Fairy, which is dumpling, Tang Yuan, which is a local brand. And you can see I'm wearing a hat, which is a cross promotion with a hat company. And we made a hat within a very short period of time. It's red for Chinese New Year. And then I have this pants, which is a sample pants that we're trying to do with Haagen-Dazs.
Oh my God, it all comes, dumplings, Haagen-Dazs, red hot pants, and a red hot hat.
Correct, for the good luck,
for the good
Chinese New Year. That's right.
All powered by General Mills.
That's
okay,
right.
I need to go to China.
General Mills China.
I love it. Well, and that's also fascinating because you mentioned Haagen-Dazs is not just a brand that you're distributing, but you're also operating the retail stores for Haagen-Dazs
right.
as well. Can
Correct.
You talk about that?
Yeah, so this is the beauty about in China. So we have we sell to normal retail stores. We in China we call hyper, super, which is very much like Walmart, Carrefour, that kind of big stores. We also have convenience stores. But the most exciting part is we also have 400 retail stores, our own stores, where we sell not only the small cup, big cup, but also creations. So for instance, you will have creations of a cherry blossom creations, and which you can only find in China. And lots of times when I send and post these photos on my Facebook, all my American friends say, "Where are they? I won't tell them." But they're not available in the United States. I always tell them, just like I tell you, Nadine, come to China. I'll show you around.
I can't wait.
But on a serious note, I would say this is really truly online, offline, right? One of the things that the advantage that we have at Gentleman's China is we sell online, but we also have this retail store. We also go to, you know, Carrefour, Walmart type of stores. So it's really a virtual cycle, which not a lot of companies or brands they have. So we also have this partnership with Alibaba, and we own an Alibaba platform, even here in the United States, where we link all the retail and our 400 stores together so that we get all the consumer data and know at what point to convert them to purchase our product.
Wow. Okay, so much that you just talked about in there. And yes, I do want to find a cherry blossom Häagen-Dazs. And I want to go back to that for a second, then I want to talk about Alibaba.
Okay.
But Häagen-Dazs, you said, was a lifestyle brand. Tell me about that, because it is a wonderful brand, but I'd never considered it a lifestyle brand.
Funny you ask that question. In China, we actually grew up with Häagen-Dazs. So, you know, I'm not going to tell you how many years ago, because I won't tell you my age. But I remember in college, if your boyfriend can take you to Häagen-Dazs store, you were like, well, that's a guy you want to date. Because they always say that if you love her, take her to Häagen-Dazs store. But also at the same time, it's like a small luxury. It is not cheap. In order for them to buy you a Häagen-Dazs cup, it takes quite a bit of effort. But over the years, I think that Häagen-Dazs have been in China for more than 20 years. So over the years, you can see that it's actually coming to be a little bit dated. So my mission when I went back to China is really, how do you bring the modernized brand? How do you make that cool again and sexy again? Bring the sexy back. So what we have done, again, I'm not trying to sell the brand, is quickly shift all the money to, we don't have TV at all. Mm-hmm. The only thing we do is PR. PR, activity, events, what have you. And we hire a celebrity, which is a very, very common practice in Asia, whether that's in Japan, China, or South Korea, that we always use celebrity. But let's just give me one event. One event, with a partnership with W Hotel in Shanghai, which is very popular. It's a viral place that everybody wants to go. One event, guess what's the impression we had? One day.
Wow. It's
2.4 billion impressions.
Oh my gosh.
Just to put it into perspective, China, we have 1.3 billion people, right? 2.4 billion. And particularly our consumers are millennials. So that means, one consumer have seen this multiple times, right? Which is mind-blowing. And this also tells you the scale of China, right?
Yeah.
So, and then after that event, the people actually came back to say that, finally I felt like, it's cool again. I actually were not called dad to have a Häagen-Dazs ice cream in the store. And people will also tell me that, in the food industry, there's no other brand like Häagen-Dazs as a fashion forward brand. And that's why you see that I'm wearing this plaid leather-ish red pants. And this is, where we want to take the brand. Very, very glad to see that consumers are coming back to tell us that that's a lifestyle and fashion brand.
I love it. Okay. Wow. Okay. I have so many questions. I'm conflicted where to go with this. I do want to talk about Alibaba. I do want to talk about all the other new emerging tech that's happening and the use of technology for understanding your consumers, because mm-hmm. that's obviously hot and you have so many consumers to know. But you did mention a fact to me earlier, so just to kind of set the stage, you were talking about GDP. Mm-hmm. So what are the metrics for China?
The metrics for China, it's actually depending on what which angle you're looking for. I would say from government, from overall China economy standpoint, we look at GDP. Early on, I mentioned to you, GDP, we say 2018, we had the lowest one, which is in the last 28 years. But even that, it's 6.8 points of growth, right? 6.8% growth. And versus the United States is 3.4. Essentially, it's double the growth rate of the United States. Then if you think about scale, right, there are two biggest countries in the world. One is the United States, the second one is China. Then coupled with, really, in my mind, it's still pretty high GDP growth rate. So I think the size of the potential will be there. And so that's the overall look at a macro environment. The second piece is that if I look zero into the FMCG, or in the United States we call CPG, we look at consumer confidence. We look at whether we're actually converting from the government or company consumption of our product to the consumer consumption. Now, broader country, we talk about how do you convert from the manufacturing country to become consumer driven. But for me particularly, for my company, is looking at how do you convert the gifting to become more self-consumption. For instance, we have an interesting product. It's called a Mooncake. Mooncake is it is for Mid-Autumn Festival. Now, for folks who don't know Mid-Autumn Festival, it's like Thanksgiving here in the United States, where people gather together, the family gather together, but they also give a gift. It's called Mooncake. Now, traditional Mooncake is it's this dry bakery stuff, but we actually have ice cream Mooncake, which I can show you some pictures later on. In the past, it's about 90% consumption is coming from the government, or you know, you give to other people as a gift from company standpoint. Now, but because the President Xi Jinping came to the and completely changed the government policy, the anti-corruption, what have you. So we see that the consumption from the group or company came down dramatically. So for us, really how to look at it, change that to be consumer consumption, and which I think that we have done a pretty good job. Last year, we still see pretty good growth, despite the fact that entire government consumption came down.
Wow. Okay, Mooncake, another thing I have to see when I'm in China. Mm-hmm. So, okay, so let's come back to Alibaba then, because, I mean, obviously, very, very big mm-hmm. topic for everyone. Mm-hmm. How are you working with Alibaba, and what other things are you exploring while you're in China?
We are, so everybody here is talking about Alibaba, but in China, realistically, we're actually working with two big ecosystems. We don't even call that Alibaba or JD, we call that ecosystem, and Tencent. Tencent and Alibaba is two big ecosystems. So under that ecosystem, they have obviously e-com, which is their biggest part. They also have cloud, they also sell data, they also have food delivery. One of the things that today I really want to talk about is food delivery, which is very, very unique in China. Here we have Uber Eats, but in terms of scale, I would say that in China it is so much more advanced. For instance, with Ali, we actually partner with a part of their subsidiary. It's called Elema. Elema in China means, are you hungry?
Yes, I am. It's lunchtime right now.
Yeah. Are you hungry? We have a dumpling business. Dumpling business about 10 years ago or 15 years ago, you would say, hey, you can have a homemade dumpling within 30 minutes because it's frozen. It feels like fresh, feels like a mom-made, but within 30 minutes, you can have it. Guess what? Most recently, we have Elema. We can actually deliver to you. You don't even have to cook within 30 minutes. If you order online on the app, 30 minutes later, you can have this freshly made dumpling. And we figured out we actually cannot, we are just part of the players in the ecosystem. We cannot compete with them. We actually not competing with in the typical competition such as Sinian and Sanquan, which is also local dumpling companies. We're actually competing more with the food deliveries. Mm. So we figured out that we cannot be the enemy. Let's sleep with the enemy. So starting last year, we actually had a partnership with them in the 60 kind of locations where we actually cook our dumpling, not we, but we sell the dumpling to them, and they will cook the dumpling in their kitchen. Then they deliver to the offices, the homes within half an hour, which is a fantastic business model for us from a margin standpoint, also from a new business model standpoint, which is a new revenue stream for us.
Mm. Okay, so that's really smart and a great way to partner. And I like how you said, you're not actually competing with other dumpling companies. You're competing with the food delivery companies who are delivering different kinds of food.
Right.
So fantastic. So let's talk about your perspective on the global marketing capabilities, because now you were responsible for all of e-commerce at Mondelez,
right,
and have transitioned into a CEO role. So here in the US, and now you're in China running a massive business as CEO. Mm-hmm. Like, what are the big differences that you see between the two, both from a capabilities perspective, but also from a role perspective?
So I think that I was lucky enough because I started my job with General Mills, although I was in marketing, but it was a GM type of marketing. At a very early stage, you actually had to oversee the cross-functional team. You don't necessarily need to know every single thing about the cross-functional team, but you don't need to know that, hey, what are the questions to ask? You sort of like know everything. So for me, is my career is always being in marketing, but happening to, you know, oversee cross-functionally. And my last job with Mondelez was also really, really exciting because it was e-commerce, which was new. There's a lot of data. I spent lots of time in Silicon Valley, you know, talking to startups or what have you. So that really prepared me for China. For China, CEO job is more take a step further, right? So it's the ultimate responsibility for the entire organization. And that was based on the foundation that I built throughout my career. At the same time, because China is so ahead of a lot of countries in terms of e-com, new retail, and my experience with Mondelez really, really helped. And last but not least, I would say that because I was originally from China, and I had a lot of experience globally, back in the United States, in Europe, in AP, you know, so that that really propelled me to lead a company, not only from singular US perspective or from China perspective, it's really a global perspective. And I, when I got there, and I know immediately saying, how do I transform a legacy company into a modern organization? Because I have seen all, I have been to so many different categories, whether that's a household, whether that's a fashion, whether that's food.
I love it. Oh my gosh, okay, so much in there. So obviously we know that there's a lot of growth in China and that things are moving at a very rapid pace. As you said, you know, China fast. And what you were talking about earlier is all around innovation and really understanding the consumers and transforming brands into these lifestyle brands and transforming legacy brands into modern brands. A lot of those practices we're doing here in the United States, but are there more tools available to you, more insights, or something that's giving China an incremental advantage over, let's say, US-based marketers?
It is the opposite. We don't have a lot of insights. And this is the way I call, if you want to be fearless, China is a place to become, to be bold and fearless. And I even coined this term, say, all the people that are high in China, I call that the BBS. What is the BBS? Bold, beautiful, and smart. Especially for my brand, Haagen-Dazs and Wan Chao Ferry type of brands. We don't. So it's about, you try that. And quick turnaround. In the United States, we call that fast fail. But in China, it is really fast fail. But you pick it up. You get up and you roll with it. And you got to have that guts. And you got to still, whatever happens, I can still sleep at night. Because I know tomorrow is gonna be a better day. You're always gonna fail, and you're always gonna get up and run with it. We don't have enough insights. Even Nielsen data is not as robust as back in the United States.
Wow, okay. Well, I love that. The BBS, well, you're definitely at the top of the BBS.
Oh, thank you.
I keep looking at these red pants. They're pretty amazing. I want to be able to be BBS and wear pants like that. That sounds good. So very cool. Well, let's take a step back because we've talked a lot about you, your role, obviously tremendous experience across the globe. But underneath all of this is you and how you're operating your personal life, because that's a lot going on there. Plus, you mentioned your mom, and I'm really sorry to hear that has passed now after battling cancer. Tell me how you think about things from a personal perspective as you're making your choices on what you're going to do next.
You know, it's tough. My son is 11 years old. He is back in the United States, and I'm in China. Obviously, it's very, very tough. I went back for the three reasons I mentioned. At times, you know, I ask myself that, you know, what I need to do. You know, my son sometimes saying that, hey, mom, you know, your career is more important than me. And when he says that, you know, the tears come to my eyes. But sometimes he's also good. He will tell me that, mom, I'm so proud of you because most of my friends' parents' moms, they don't work. You're independent. And this last time when I was here, and the one thing he said was made me really, really bawling. Mm-hmm. He told me that, mom, I was asking him a question saying, hey, Ferris, what kind of girlfriend do you want to have? He actually paused, and then he told me that, Mom, I want to have a girlfriend just like you. And that, to me, is the ultimate.
You're gonna make me cry.
And I'm very, very proud of him. So it's being a mom, being a professional mom full time, and you know, ambitious female leader, it is difficult. But this is also, you know, I felt that when you teach your kids, you don't tell them what to do, you show them how to do it. And you know, I think that it's always going to be up and downs, but I truly believe that I'm setting a really good example for my son, and he will find a really good friend or spouse or significant other.
I absolutely believe that's true. So wow, okay, that was that is wonderful to hear, and I'm recuperating because I'm sitting here looking at you, and I can see it how moving it was to you. It was moving to me, but wow, okay. So let's talk about when you were young, because you are Chinese. You're an exceptional role model for a lot of women today, having earned your place as a CEO. How did you even get started in this, and what was it like?
I think I'm lucky. My dad has always been entrepreneurial. He has his own company, and you know, albeit it's not as big, but he's always on the run. So growing up, seeing him doing that, you know, it's almost implanted into my brain that, you know, this is how, you know, you do the business. And so when I was 18, I was lucky enough to get into kind of like a fashion kind of startup.
Well, that explains the pants. Okay.
So that time, you know, one thing I learned at that time is, you know, I'm very creative, very, you know, curious. What I learned at that time is really operationally that I need to learn more. And that's why I came to the United States. I actually went to MBA. The MBA is dual degrees, marketing plus supply chain management. So if you look at me, people will never believe that I'm actually had a second major in supply chain management. Was because I know that the biggest thing is that not only you develop a great product, but also you need to figure out how to deliver to consumers in a way. And that's why it was also because that was because of that, I got into e-com, because e-com is a new way to actually get to consumers. So this is all linked. And then, you know, after General Mills, after Rocky Banquise, after Mondelez Craft, you know, I'm just so lucky. And throughout the times, I had lots of fantastic mentors and showing me the way, although most of them, they're guys. I was talking to you yesterday. In fact, I have not seen, you know, a lot of people who are really truly not from the United States, a female actually made to, you know, really senior level. So for me, this sounds a little bit cheesy, but truly, this is what I believe. I want to become a trailblazer for female, particularly people who was not born here. Show them a way, say, actually, we can also make it. It's truly how I believe. You know, people say that you're ambitious, what have you. Yes, I'm indeed ambitious, but more importantly, as I get older, I want to become a kind of an example for people and to tell them that you can make it.
Wow, so you're only 23 right now, so.
I love you.
So we will be graced with your great mentorship for many, many years. So, okay, wonderful. So now you're at a point in your life where you've pretty much accomplished so much. If you could do something in your next role, what would it be?
If I'm thinking my future, I certainly want to come back and really lead from at a global level. So first and foremost, I truly believe in order to become a global leader, you have to have experience not only in the United States. You also need to go out and learn and come back. Mm-hmm. The second piece is with my experience now, I felt that I'm more equipped to really you know, showcase not only what we learned in the United States, but also countries like China, where I said earlier, a lot of times, particularly from FMCG and CPG standpoint, they're ahead of here in the United States. So how can I use what I learned? How do I use the attitude that I practice in China, which is fearless, which is not knowing what's going to happen next day, but you still go for that. That kind of attitude, bring that back to the United States and speed up. And not 100% at China speed, but maybe combined with US speed plus China speed, getting to the optimal speed at a global level.
Wow. Okay. Well, that will be amazing to watch, and I'm sure that will happen. And you'll have to keep me posted on maybe when you do come back, because we'll have to do a follow-up with you and see what it is like to combine China speed and U.S. speed and what you're doing then. So we are unfortunately out of time. I only have one more question. Actually, no, I have to fit in a second question because I'm dying to know. So I have two questions for you. First question, if you could give somebody a great piece of career advice that you learned the hard way, what would that be?
Never be afraid.
Okay, and no need for any further explanation on that one, because that's pretty much says it all. Okay, and then lastly, if you could do anything in the world other than run a global company or anything that you're doing now, money, talent, no object, you can do anything, what would you be doing?
The thing that I really want is that, you know, this is so silly. I really want my mom to be here. I mean, when my mom passed away, I was in Singapore. Although I'm so close to her, much closer than from the United States, but I was in Singapore. I wish I could hold her hand when she was leaving. And that's what I really, really want to do. And, you know, at this very moment.
I understand.
Truly, you know, in Chinese culture is that you need to change the clothes for her, and I did not do that, and I went back to China, and I'm sorry, I'm real, and this is how, you mm-hmm. know, typically people always say it's about job, it's about this. Mm-hmm. Really, at this moment, particularly during Chinese New Year, what I want is that just to hold her hand and say, Mom, it's okay. It's not forever. It's just a goodbye, and just saying that I'll miss you until we meet next time.
Oh my gosh. I lost my father and didn't get to say goodbye to him either, so I understand.
Yeah, on the way here, I was just thinking, listening to the music. It's so funny. I was listening to Mary J. Blige. It's like a Be Without You. And let's talk about love or what have you. But when I listened to the music, it was 2005, it was released. And that was a time that I went back to see my mom, and that song always reminds you of that specific time. I don't know about you, but the smell and sound, like a song, always gave me that edge. And I was crying on the way here.
Oh. Okay, well, we'll spend the rest of the day crying together. So thank you for that. I'm trying to make light of it, but it's not a light subject. And I really appreciate you sharing that. I think that's the perfect thing to come back as, holding hands. So thank you for being here with me. And I wish you all the fun and enjoyment in the world as you continue on your journey in China. And I can't wait for you to come back here so we can spend more time together.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed talking to you, Nadine.
Oh, thank you. Till next time.